This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Hi, I'm Greg Watson, and welcome to Property Matters. Normally I'm here with Philly Tossie. He returns next week, and I really look forward to having him back. It gets a bit lonely here in studio without someone to bounce your thoughts off. So I'll be looking forward to that, and Philly, we'll talk to you soon. We're going to look at the news today, and this is all things property related. The first one was an article that was on the front of the Manawatu Standard, and the local Real Estate Institute of New Zealand Manawatu spokesman Andy Stewart said a number of houses coming onto the market still remains low, and multiple offer standoffs impact open homes remain the reality for the foreseeable future. He said it's going to be hard out there for buyers, and he calls it quite a lolly scramble. He says, take your best shot right off the bat. In a multiple offer situation, you're unlikely to get a counter offer or a chance to negotiate. The seller's just going to pick up the best one, Stewart said. So rule one in a seller's market is to never fall in love with a house until it's bought, he said. Otherwise, the search for property can be more of an emotional roller coaster than it already is. He says it's a real battle out there, and it's likely that buyers will miss out on homes before securing a property. So experts are encouraging house hunters to make selling to them as easy as possible. First-time buyers in particular have to make sure they have all their ducks in a row, from sorting the finance to checking council records. And the more a buyer sorts out before making an offer, the fewer conditions they'll need to include. Andy Stewart says most offers coming in are conditional on things like getting financing, and very few are unconditional. But the closer you can get to unconditional, the more attractive your offer will be. Watson Real Estate Principal Ken Watson said the buyers should aim to view a house before an open home, and this gave the buyer extra time to get some specialist checks done. Manawatu Property Investors Association President Pauline Beisel said research was crucial to making a successful offer on the property. She said that finding a house's rateable value used to be a reliable guide to setting an offer, but in the current market, even the shabbiest of homes was selling for more. As a rule of thumb, to get an accurate base price of offers, buyers need to add $1,000 for every week since the rateable value was set, she says. She also advised aiming for as early settlement as possible, as sellers might choose to go for a lower offer if it cleared quicker than the highest bid. Moving on to another article which just appeared in the Manawatu Standard called Reservations Explored About the Value of Empty Spaces. So there are some options and some pictures of options of medium density housing which should be built on the former Manawatu Bowling Club site. And as the writer says, there's one thing that's certain to get Palmer's North residents wound up, it's an attack on their green spaces. And with regard to the Great Reserves debacle in 2013, the City Council identified some 15 properties it considered were of little or no value to the community and proposed selling them. But it was wrong. More than 300 people said in submissions, reacting to one of the most hotly contested proposals in recent council history. The Willowbank Reserve, which is on the corner of Waterloo Crescent and Hind Place, was earmarked for sale before residents forced a rethink after more than 180 submissions around that reserve were entered. So even Mungoni Park, a bit of grassland off the end of the Mungoni Stream walkway with a couple of hard-to-find alleyways through to neighbouring streets. Again, even when they wanted to put a path down there, it was hotly contested. So remember, the former Manawatu Bowling Club land that I mentioned earlier is on the corner of Fitzherbert Avenue and Park Road, and it really doesn't appear to be good for much, but you could fit in some really good median density housing there. In the mid-2000s, the council thought it would be a good idea to sell it and invest the proceeds on enhancing the esplanade, but public pressure prompted the backpedal. And so this notion again has reared its head, with the council proposing to use it for housing. And in this article, which was on stuff.co.nz in the regional Manawatu section, there is a really good picture of what they were proposing. It looks quite nice. But once again, the thinking is likely to face opposition. So the council has learned not to do things secretly, so they're signalling that this proposal is happening, and there'll be options for public feedback, etc., on what people think about that. So almost just, I guess, another development that we talked about recently was the consent that was granted almost 8 years ago to Mighty River Power to build the Turitea wind farm overlooking Palmerston North. And 3.5 years ago, doubts were raised at a district plan hearing about whether the 60-turbine development, which was slashed in half from what was originally thought, would ever go ahead. And as time went by, it looked like those doubts would be realised. But then in March came the news that it is going to go ahead, and they're proposing to start installing in 2019. So the work on preparing the ground for the first 33 wind turbines at the northern end of the site begins in August under what is now Mercury New Zealand. So from now, residents living within 3.5 kilometres of the site who will be sharing roads with construction traffic or who have earlier expressed a particular interest in the project will start receiving their first direct communications from the energy company about what happens next. There is a meeting on May 8th to help form a community liaison group required by a condition of the consent. So we'll have to see what happens there and whether that all goes ahead. Now, speaking of land, just heading to Auckland, land that might be used for other purposes. The headline in the Stuff Business section for this one says that houses likely to replace tents as Auckland waterfront campground goes on the market. Sandspit Motor Camp in Waiuku is on the market, and it's had decades of hosting thousands of holiday makers. You might know it. It's got a harbourside motor camp, could be bowled to make way for houses. It's on the shores of the Manukau Harbour in Waiuku, south of Auckland, and has been a holiday destination since early last century, but it's now on the market. So it's got, normally offers several different types of accommodation options. It is freehold land and buildings, and of course if somebody does buy it, then there's a possibility there to develop as well. There's four individual titles, so it could also get split and developed. Even the land alone is worth over $2.25 million, so we'll have to see what consents might get sought, but certainly under the zoning in that area, it's likely to be something that generally fits in with surrounding properties and surrounding areas. Further, staying in Auckland, there's an article by the Real Estate Institute of New Zealand released using their data on stuff.co.nz saying that central Auckland house prices plummet, although they immediately say there is a lot of variation across the city. So this is really sensationalising some headlines. But it does say that new data from the Real Estate Institute shows sales activity around the city in the 6 months to the end of March compared to the same time the year before. Mount Albert had the biggest price fall, from a median $1.17 million last year to $805,000 this year. So that's a drop of 31.2%. Royal Oak had a big drop as well, from $1.16 million to $865,000. And Long Bay was in third place with a price drop of 24.8%. But these are the exceptions, and we must remember it wasn't long ago that prices were going up really significantly. And in fact, in the last year, the median price in Takapuna rose 30%, from 1 million to 1.3, followed by Onehunga, which is in second place with an increase of 19.4%. So there's still plenty of suburbs rising, but it just makes for better headlines if we talk about the ones that are dropping, of course. The general strong growth that Auckland has had is not surprising, and there should still continue to be price increases for some time yet, but the market has slowed there. There's only so high that prices can go. Then there was an article on interest.co.nz that talks about real estate companies working in the Auckland market. And it says that Auckland continues to be a tough market for the real estate industry, with commissions in the first quarter of this year down an estimated 29% compared to the first quarter of 2016. They estimate that agents earned about $119 million in gross commissions from residential property sales, down from $167 million in the same period in 2016. Even compared to the first quarter of 2017, commissions were down 13%, and compared to the first quarter of last year, they were down 12%. Well, this is almost entirely due to a decline in sales rather than the weakening of prices, because the number of sales reported by the Real Estate Institute of New Zealand declined from 6,692 in the first quarter of 2016 to 4,539. That's a 30% drop in the first quarter of this year. So prices have remained remarkably stable, but certainly there's less properties for sale. In other regions, and Manawatu is certainly one of those, prices continue to rise and continue to perform well, and will continue to do so for some time to come. Another sort of follow-up article staying in this theme is from Stuff Business, saying days of flipping houses for a quick buck may be over in Auckland. So they're saying that just the days of buying a property, doing it up a bit and selling it have pretty much gone, or at least are harder to find just in the current market at the moment. The median capital gain of properties bought and sold within 2 years in Wellington was $85,000. But if you look at the median capital gain across Auckland in the last 6 months for properties bought and sold within the past 2 years, the capital gain is about $40,000. So some of these really extreme stories that you see are just things that the media picks up on. Tauranga had a median gain over a couple of years of $68,500 and Christchurch at $65,000. So although capital gains are becoming more difficult in Auckland, there is still money to be made for savvy homeowners who are well-informed and buy at the right price. Alistair Helm, a property commentator, says that the key is buying well. If you negotiate hard and buy well, you can make money in any market. Arguably, in today's market, it's easier to drive a harder deal and get a great purchase than when the market is red hot. Remember, they're only talking about Auckland market here. Buying rundown properties and doing them up could still pay off, even when sellers had to pay tax on the resulting gains. So it's really seemed there for a while that any property that you'd buy in Auckland and slap some paint onto and then sell would get you a huge increase, but those days have slowed, definitely. Like I say, Wellington, it's still happening a bit, and in the regions at the moment, it's not too much of an option, as the lower prices mean that the capital gains are not quite so high. This article from the NZ Herald, again saying it's a buyer's market. So once again, we're talking about Auckland, but the headlines themselves don't say that. So it's really important when you read real estate headlines to differentiate between Auckland and or the remainder of the country. So the activity in March, sales in Auckland of just over 2,000 dwellings, was a fall in March last year of 18% and 13% lower, as I mentioned earlier, than the first quarter of a year ago. And so the number of sales are falling because there are not enough houses coming on the market, is what it appears. See, in many places in the country, people aren't wanting to sell. If Auckland, they've bought recently, then they're not. You know, the price may have gone backwards a little. If they're in the regions, then people are generally afraid to sell because there's not enough properties out there to choose from. And it is a real issue, particularly here in the Manawatu, to know that or to know whether you can find a property if you are to sell. And that gives people great reluctance to put their home on the market. Remember that, relatively speaking, if you buy and sell in the same market, then you might get more for your house, but you're buying another house for more as well. So the real issue in Manawatu and at the moment is that there's not enough homes to choose from, not enough on the market as people wait for house prices to continue rising. It is certainly the best time to sell a house since 2008, although in this Manawatu area. And so if you were looking to sell, it's still going to be a good time. The next headline in politics is that Twyford, that's the housing minister, looks to Auckland-Hamilton corridor as key to the housing crisis. So Phil Twyford's looking at this area and he continues to make bold statements about other parts of the plan to solve the housing crisis, even though Kiwi Build's failure is fairly obvious at the moment. But he's wanting a growth corridor between Auckland and Hamilton. So he was very much wanting to get rid of any urban growth boundary around the country's largest urban area. And since 18 months since the election, he said he's still committed to getting rid of that boundary. And that way it would flood, or what he wants to do is flood the market with development opportunities. He wants to break the land banking economy and drive down the cost of urban land. So it all sounds good. We'll just have to watch this space. So we're going to take a break now and we're going to have a song. Here's Grange from ZZ Top.
Rumors spreading round in that Texas town about the shack outside of Grange. And you know what I'm talking about. Just let me know if you wanna go to that home out on the range. They got a lot of nice girls. I'm
And that was ZZ Toff, and this is Greg Watson. You're on Property Matters, the show that talks all things property. We'll just do another article or two about the sales side of things before we head into rental properties. But this article was really good. It was on a website called sunlive.co.nz, and it was called Does Your New Property Check Out? Now, the difficult thing about buying a home is knowing what you don't know. And if you're a first home buyer or it's been a long time since you were last in the property market, it can be tricky to know what to look out for. Kevin Lampensmith of the Real Estate Authority says that most things seem hard when you do them for the first time, and navigating the property market is no different. We encourage everyone to build a support team when they're preparing to buy a property so they're ready when they find a place they like. Family and friends can be a good source of information and support, but you need some professionals on your side too. He says that means finding a lawyer or a conveyancer before you start looking at properties, and certainly getting their advice before you sign anything. The REA also recommends that buyers hire a qualified property inspector to check a place out before making an offer. Every property that you see will come with different things to think about, he says. So to make that decision a bit easier, the REA has developed Property Checker, a new interactive online tool, and it's on the website settled.govt.nz. Like the name Property Checker suggests, the tool helps buyers identify problems with the property. It's easy to use. All you need to do is answer a set of questions about a property that you're interested in. If you've gone to an open home and thought, oh, this could be the place for us, you can go through the questions to find out what research you should be doing. And again, that's Property Checker on settled.govt.nz. For example, if you're checking out a property built in the early 2000s with monolithic cladding, Property Checker will flag up things you need to ask about, such as the home's weather tightness and structural integrity. It will also point out possible property hazards such as earthquakes, flooding, coastal erosion or volcanic eruption, and explain the impact of different types of ownership. Kevin Lampensmith says none of this is designed to put you off the property, but just to highlight things that you might not have thought about. And think of Property Checker as a critical friend that honestly gives you their objective opinion. It won't have all the information you need, but it's a great place to start. So that sounds like a pretty good tool, just a way to remind you about what to do. Now here's something from the world of rental properties. And this was on scoop.co.nz. It was a press release by Stop the War on Tenancies organisation. And the headline is Rental Property Child Hospitalisation Claim Contradicted. So from the article, it says Housing Minister Phil Twyford justified the launch of the costly new rental property standards in February by saying 6,000 children are admitted each year for housing-sensitive hospitalisations. However, there's quite a bit of research that's been done here by Mike Butler, and he sent a series of questions to the Minister's Office, the Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment, Ministry of Health, all seeking evidence to support that rather specific claim made by the Minister in February. And the full quote was actually that 6,000 children are admitted each year for housing-sensitive hospitalisations, and that these children have been found to be nearly four times more likely to be rehospitalised and 10 times more likely to die in the following 10 years. So the important thing here was that the actual numbers don't stack up or don't appear to stack up. And certainly in the first reading of the Healthy Homes Guarantees Bill, Mr. Twyford said, it's no longer good enough for this country of ours that there are 42,000, in fact, the latest figures indicate 50,000, preventable hospitalisations of children with respiratory infectious diseases. However, the Ministry of Health data from 2018 shows that approximately 10,800 children, or 13,000 events, with potentially housing-related conditions are presented to hospitals in New Zealand each year. Now, under the Official Information Act, under a category in the table titled Publicly Funded Hospital Discharges in 2015-2016, showed that of the 250,000, more or less, discharges of children and young people up to age 19 that year, there was a single entry recording a hospitalisation for a condition exacerbated by housing. So it sounds like it's really quite a beat up indeed, which makes you wonder, why are landlords being asked to make all these changes when there doesn't seem to be evidence that, because recall this, the standards are talking about heating, insulation, ventilation, moisture control and drafts, presumably to combat what the minister thought was a prevalence of cold, damp housing. These standards would have no effect on hospitalisations resulting from disease transmission in crowded houses, or respiratory diseases from indoor smoking, or unflued portable gas heaters, or even infections from poor hygiene, which are some of these ones that are bundled in with people that could possibly be housing related. So it's more around the people that they are around. It's interesting to know that where that's going to go, because property owners may be forced to spend up to $7,000 per dwelling on changes that could be considered unnecessary. All of that from Mike Butler on Stop the War on Tenancies, trying to bring a little bit of sense into the situation that we've got with regards to the requirements on landlords. News in Rotorua, a couple of things in Rotorua real estate. One is that they've sold five properties over $1 million in a month, which was something that hasn't happened there before, to the best of my knowledge. And in the New Zealand Herald, another article about Rotorua says, and in quotes, "For every house it sells, you make a family homeless." So a desperate housing crisis in Rotorua is forcing more families and working people into homelessness, a local social agency says. So the Housing First initiative is bringing hope to those people who live in that sort of environment. So Love Soup Rotorua co-founder Gina Pfeiffer, excuse the pronunciation, says that for every house that sells, you make a family homeless. "We don't have enough rental stock here in Rotorua. The only thing we're stockpiling is all our homeless people until those houses are made available." She says a lot of the problem is hidden as there's overcrowded homes. Sometimes you have three families in one home. That's more than 21 people, and they don't recognise those two other families as homeless. So they've got. You know, when landlords sell their homes, that can be a considerable number of people requiring more housing. So really the ultimate problem around the country with regards a shortage of properties is generally that there's just been too much immigration into the areas and not enough houses to keep up with it. Rotorua is very similar to a number of other areas around the country in that regard. So as the government tries to get people buying homes, it means that there are less in the rental pool. And the capital gains, just finally, on noted.co.nz, there was the question, wasn't the capital gains tax part of the transformational Labor government? Saying that they talked big game in opposition, but then let the capital gains tax outcome be determined effectively by an opinion poll. So Labor's pulled out of the capital gains tax. They already had something in place in terms of what they call the bright line test anyway. It seemed to be put the too hard basket, and probably in the political suicide basket as well. Labor's decided to try and stay in power rather than bring in a capital gains tax. So you can always let me know what you think about that, whether it's fair or not. Thanks for listening. This has been Property Matters with Greg Watson. Billy Tossie's back next week. Have a wonderful week.
Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.